Chapter 20. In Defense of the Mountain. Irregulars. Arcus. Mericus motioned to Hasquin. The bigger man moved through the thick vegetation soundlessly.
"You're our best tracker," whispered Mericus. "Someone's been through here recently. Am I right?"
Hasquin nodded. He moved his hand out so very carefully, as if even the air stirring would bring the foes onto them. He indicated darker patches on the quick tree's pithy sheaths with loose fingers.
"See that? Contact bruising. They're good. Not bent the trees out of shape." "That's great," said Mericus. "So they're this high up the mountain already."
A chill wind stirred the quick tree's vegetable sleep. Otherwise, the forest was silent. No beast nor bird spoke since the Night Lords had arrived.
"What shall we do, Sarge? Vox it in? That'd bring them down on us real quick. Question is this information worth the risk? It's probably a party out scouting for the assault gathering at the mountain's feet. We could send Martinus out again. He's the quicker runner." "He's not holding up too well," said Mericus. "Not since Aelius was taken. Send Pontian. He's..."
Something round and cold and hollow pressed against the side of his neck.
"Don't move," said a voice.
There was an odd quality to it, transhumanly deep, but not quite like the voice of a space marine. Mericus twisted around. The barrel of the bolt gun slid around his neck. A broad face looked back at him. Thick war paint striped it various shades of southern green. The colour made him look fierce, but on closer inspection, the face was also less than a man's. A boy's face, distorted by arcane science.
"Obadiah," said Mericus.
He put his hand on the square block of the bolter.
"Mericus?"
Mericus stood up. Hasquin had his hands in the air. Three young ultramarines resolved themselves out of the greenery, like figures hidden in an optical illusion suddenly revealed. Mericus recognized them all. The scouts had been familiar sights in Sothopolis, sent out to help the colonists as part of their normalization training or some such. He smiled in relief.
"I thought we were dead there," he said.
"You almost were," said Solon. Mericus remembered him being particularly humorless.
"Where's your sergeant?"
"Hurt," said Obadiah.
The boys looked at each other uneasily. Boys didn't cover what they were. They were taller than Mericus and massively muscled, but he lacked a suitable alternative term.
"We're heading for the Emperor's Watch, but we can't move fast with him," said Obadiah.
Mericus frowned.
"Come in by the tunnels."
"Not safe," said Obadiah,
and Mericus sensed a deeper reluctance behind his words.
"We came down last night, crashed."
"You?" said Obadiah. "The mountain is holding out. We're not much good in the tunnels. The Night Lords would kill us in a second, so we're sent out to scout."
"We're nothing but something to trip over," said Hasquin, frustratedly.
"So we keep an eye out for infiltration teams. We drop the occasional ambush when we can," said Mericus.
"You've killed some of them?" said Solon, incredulously. Mericus nodded.
"A few. Look, you better come back with us. My men are resting up nearby in an old herder's hide. You'd be much better off inside the mountain."
"We were going to help the civilians," said Solon. He gave Obadiah a dark look. "But our acting sergeant changed his mind."
"We had to keep Arcus safe," said Obadiah. "Missions change."
"Arcus is your sergeant?"
The youths nodded.
"I'm in charge until he recovers," said Obadiah.
"He's been down since the invasion began."
"He'll make it," said Obadiah aggressively.
That told Mericus everything he needed to know. Mericus was sympathetic to the youth. Space Marines were not indestructible, either in body or mind. Losing their mentor would be hard.
"Is he far?"
"Not far," said Obadiah. "He's with Tebakai."
"Let's go and get him then. Then you should come back with us. There are a number of your own in the mountain. You can rejoin them."
"They're not all dead," said the third. Mericus didn't know him so well. Ptolemachus, that was his name.
"They're not all dead."
The young recruits grinned with relief at one another. Their demeanor changed. Guns that had been pointing at Mericus and Hasquin suddenly were not.
"Finally,"
said Solon. Unless you're going to give us another reason to stay out of the forest, brother. Obadiah glared at him.
Asquin, I reckon you can put your hands down now. Lads, we should go.
First, we must get our sergeant and Tebekai, said Obadiah. Mericus looked upwards through the crowding fronds of the trees.
All right, but we need to be quick. It's getting late.
The Sothern's camp was noiseless. They communicated by glance and gesture. When Mericus and Hasquin led the scouts through the narrow, vegetation-choked entrance and inside, many eyes followed them, but nobody spoke. A cascade of swiftvine hid the gap in the rock. The plants obligingly rewove themselves into a thick mat at night, making the hideout practically impossible to see from outside. Inside, the cave opened up into a long chamber that ended in an abrupt dead end. The ceiling became lower and lower until the far end terminated in a shallow curve, barely half the height of a man. Unusually, the cave had part filled. If there was a tube leading into the mountain, as there was in most of these seeming cul-de-sacs, it had been buried by the drift of packed soil and leaf mould that made up the floor. The air in the cave was blue with wood smoke from the one small fire they allowed themselves. As the green light from the entrance was limited, the endless twilight of the underworld reigned within. Mericus had the boys bring their sergeant to the back of the cave, where the Sothern's field medike Kerit had a small station upon a not-quite-level shelf of black rock. A limited collection of bandages and other medical supplies was neatly arrayed at its head. He eyed Mericus with a mixture of amazement and extreme annoyance as the giant Arcus was laid down by his charges. Kerit jerked his head meaningfully toward the cave mouth.
"You better wait by the entrance," Mericus told the scouts.
They were reluctant to go, but Tebekai understood and gently coaxed them away from the medike station.
"I will stay," said Obadiah.
Mericus put his hands on the Space Marine's huge shoulders.
"Let Kerit do his work, Obadiah. I'll come and get you when he's had a look, all right?"
Obadiah stared over Mericus's head to where Arcus lay. Mericus thought the scout was past hearing his words, or perhaps deliberately ignoring him. But he turned without a word and went to join his brothers. Mericus watched them gather by the slit leading outside. Demathon approached them with a canteen of water and a handful of field rations. After a pause, they accepted them, and Mericus went back to the medike. Kerit stared at the giant body, as if he had no idea what manner of creature the sergeant was. His beer filled the rock shelf.
"Is he dead?" asked Mericus softly.
"Not quite. He's gone into suspension."
"They can do that. They can do that.
When they are injured."
"How?" said Mericus.
Kerit rounded on him.
"How by all the Illyrian hell should I know? Damn it, Mericus. I'm not even a proper medike. The best I'm for is fixing the broken legs on Quarians."
He looked hopelessly at the wounded Space Marine.
"I wish I never said I knew a little healing. I'd be happier with a lasgun. Men are hard enough, but this is well beyond me. He's a legionary, Mericus. What do I know about that? I don't even know where to start. He's as big as a fantine, and in there..."
He pointed at the black wound in Arcus's side.
"What's in there is barely human."
Mericus glanced at the scouts.
"Keep it down, Kerit. You forget how fine their ears are. Can you fix him?"
"He suffered massive internal trauma."
Kerit shook his head.
"Honestly, it looks like he took a hit from a las cannon. There's nothing I can do."
"Apparently, he did take a hit from a las cannon."
Kerit leaned on the rock shelf. He closed his eyes. In the gloom of the cave, his fatigue-pale skin was ghostly.
"Well, that explains a lot. For the time being, his body is compensating. If I could get him to a Legion apothecary, they might fix him up. But up here, he's on a slow road to the underworld. He's got a day, maybe at best."
"Is there an apothecary in the mountain?"
"One, I think. But this level of injury is beyond the facilities there. If they still held the Castellum, there might be a chance, but the move would probably kill him anyway." "I'm sorry, Mericus. It's astounding he's lasted this long. His time's up. There's nothing I can do."
"What do we tell the boys?"
Kerrit wiped his hands on a filthy towel and threw it down. They're not boys, Mericus. They might look a little like it, but they're not. They're space marines. There's only one thing you can tell them. Kerrit lifted eyes made bleary and red by lack of sleep and wood smoke. The truth. Clearly, Kerrit didn't want to be the man to deliver it. The scouts huddled together, attention directed to where their surrogate father lay.
I'll do it.
Thank you. It's for the best. When are we returning? The men are close to exhaustion.
This evening. There's been no sign of the enemy up here for hours, but that might have more to do with the scouts than with us.
Mericus went to deliver the bad news. They could tell what he was going to say. There was shocked silence, disbelief.
We're going back up the mountain later, he told them.
We should carry on fighting, said Ptolemachus. There's no time to rest. If we could get Arcas into the mountain, the apothecary there might help him, said Tebekai.
Who is it? Asked Solon.
An Imperial Fist, one of the Lightkeepers. I don't know him.
Obadiah, what's your decision? Asked Mericus.
Obadiah shifted his bolter uncomfortably. Everyone in the cave was staring at him.
Obadiah, you're in command, said Mericus.
All right, all right. Obadiah looked upwards in the direction of the peak beyond the walls. We go up. We will follow Sergeant Mericus and his men. Arcas died before they got to the top of the mountain. Mericus was not sure if the scouts noticed when he passed, or if they just carried on, bearing their leader in silence. Only when they came to the entrance to the Pharos Caves did the young ultramarines set Arcas down, stand around him, and bow their heads. Their actions displayed a dignity that deeply moved Mericus. Gate A, as the cave was dubbed, hid in a cracked landscape where the crags of the mountain broke downwards into the upper woods. The tree line was a couple of hundred metres higher still, and by the cave, the quick trees grew tall enough to mask their presence. From outside, the cavern looked deserted. Inside, it was anything but. Warriors in the yellow of Dawn's Imperial Fists held the way. Two rough pillboxes made of field stones, expertly fitted together, guarded the entrance on the inside, manned by ultramarines in battered armour. In the middle of the entrance, calm as a man who awaits guests on his porch, stood a giant. His golden-yellow armour was bright and clean enough for the parade ground. Upon one arm was a huge shield, while the other was clad in a massive power fist, underslung with a melter gun. Implacable, immovable as Mount Pharos himself, Pollux was the keeper of the mountain.
Captain Pollux, said Mericus, you're spoiling us with this welcome. I came to see for myself the damage the traitors are doing to your world, said Pollux. How went your patrol, Sergeant? I see from the smoke they are burning the lower parts of the forest.
He looked past Mericus and his ragged band of Sothans to the young ultramarines bringing up the rear, but did not ask directly of them, not yet. Pollux liked to hear what his men had to say for themselves.
Report.
Mericus gave a lazy salute. He was incredibly tired, his lungs burning with the altitude.
The Night Lords are massing at multiple points all round the base of the mountain below our sector. I imagine it is the same elsewhere.
Pollux nodded.
They gather for another attack. We shall be ready for them.
I'm sure you will.
I, on the other hand, am about ready to drop. My men need rest, as much as you can give. Please, we've not slept for nearly 48 hours, he added. We're not like you. If only we were. If you were, then I might not trust you. Honor is in short supply among the legions. You do your part well, Sergeant.
Mericus scratched his hair. It was unkempt, full of soil and twigs, and the old gods alone knew what else.
Thanks, but a good sleep would be better than gratitude. Any word from the rest of our boys? Your comrades returned an hour ago. That news is better than a rest. Although, he added hurriedly, I will still take the rest.
Who are these others? Pollux asked.
Scouts. Found them on the mountain.
Mericus waved Obadiah forward.
Acting Sergeant Obadiah, meet Captain Alexis Pollux of the Imperial Fists. He's in charge. I'll let you two get to know each other. I'll just be over here should you need me. Slowly dying.
Without waiting to be dismissed, Mericus went to the side of the cave entrance. There, he placed his back against the smoothness of the alien stone and slid down until he was sitting on the floor. The remnants of his squad joined him and wearily slumped down beside him. He had only 9 men, a mix from all the squads. Vitellius had a few more. The rest were dead. That was the way the universe rolled the dice. Sergeant Bolarian had been overjoyed that his family had survived, only to be blown to pieces a few hours later. Someone, somewhere, was having a good laugh at Mericus's expense.
Life is a crappy business, said Mericus to himself.
Sarge?
Nothing, Tiny. Mericus watched the giant Imperial Fist talk to the scouts.
He found Pollux as stony as he did intimidating. The captain's lack of human feelings beyond anger, rectitude, and honor grated on his easygoing nature, but there was something melancholy to him also. Sorrow at the war in part, certainly, and something more. Mericus was an excellent judge of character, and he couldn't shake the feeling that Pollux thought himself unworthy.
There is a connection between us, he thought, though we hide it differently. If we talked more, we would understand each other.
The scouts saluted the Imperial Fist and went inside. Pollux beckoned Mericus. With supreme effort, he stood.
It is not an easy thing for a neophyte to lose his master. These scouts have done well.
Perhaps you should say that to them.
There is no need. They are space marines. They will understand.
Perhaps you should anyway, said Mericus. They're only young.
And why do you think I did not?
Said Pollux. A little strain entered his voice.
I have welcomed them into our company. They will fight alongside your men from now on.
Mericus's eyes widened.
That I didn't expect. Are you going to start babbling on about the honor and so forth, Mericus?
Well, no. Hang on. Are you teasing me?
About the honor?
Yes, I am, said Pollux.
I'm not completely humorless, but not about your cooperation. These ultramarines are not fully formed. They will not last long in the tunnels. That is close work, for which their armor is insufficient.
Then scavenge them some. They'll be more use to you than I'll be to them.
They cannot bear battle plate, not yet.
Their transition is incomplete. They have not taken their carapaces. Without them, our armor is useless. But they are good scouts. Like you and your shepherds, they can move through the terrain undetected. They have spent half their lives here. They are almost as Sothern as you.
I'm not a Sothern, said Mericus quietly.
His neck hurt from craning, so he dropped his eyes from Pollux's face. The Imperial Fist was huge. Mericus came only to the rims of his shoulder guards.
Your men would disagree, Mericus. You carry yourself around us as if you believe you are of no consequence. That is not true. You are a little man in stature compared to I, but your deeds are far bigger than you appreciate. More than one of us already owes you a debt of honor.
Pollux raised his massive gauntlet in salute.
Go to your rest. You will be leaving again in 4 hours.
Mericus gathered his weary crew about him. He nodded to Sergeant Solus, manning the inner defences, and stepped into the welcome cool of the Pharos. Behind him, Alexis Pollux looked out from his eyrie over the green folds of the mountain at the columns of smoke billowing skyward. For the time being, all was quiet. That would not last.